A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The Cestus Deception by Stephen Barnes. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. The red and white disc of a two-passenger Limulus-class transport sliced through Coruscant's cloud mantle. In the morning sun, it glittered like silvered ice. Spiral dancing to inaudible music, it slipped through wispy clouds to land as gently as a kiss. Its smooth, glassy side rippled. A rectangular outline appeared and then slid upwards. A tall, bearded man, wrapped in a brown robe, stepped into the doorway and hopped down, followed by a second, clean-shaven passenger. The bearded man's name was Obi-Wan Kenobi. The second, a startlingly intense younger man with fine brown hair, was named Anakin Skywalker. Obi-Wan was tired, irritable, famished, and felt as if someone had poured sand into his joints. Anakin, he noticed, seemed fresh and ready for action. The recuperative powers of youth, Obi-Wan thought ruefully. Only an emergency directive from Supreme Chancellor Palpatine himself could have summoned the two from their assignment on Forescan 6. "Well, Master," Anakin said, "I suppose this is where we part company." "I'm not certain what this is about," the older man replied. "But your time will be well spent studying at the temple." The two comrades faced and gripped each other's forearms. "Good luck," Anakin said. "Give my regards to Chancellor Palpatine." A hover car slid in next to the walkway, and Anakin hopped aboard, disappearing into the sky traffic without a backward glance. The appointed meeting place was the Tichuk Sporting Arena, a tiered shell with seating for 500,000 thronging spectators. Today, the vast stadium was empty, cleared and sequestered, hosting a very different sort of gathering. As he emerged from the echoing length of pedestrian tunnel, Obi-Wan scanned the tiered stands. Most of the rows were as empty as a Tatooine desertscape, but a few dozen witnesses were gathered in the box seat section. Obi-Wan recognized a scattering of high-level elected officials, some important but ordinarily reclusive bureaucrats, a few people from the technical branches, and even some clone troopers. Instinct and experience suggested that this was a war council. Tichuk Arena's sand-covered floor was empty, save for a pale, slender, humanoid female. She wore a white technician's cloak, and her black hair was cropped short. She stood tinkering with a gleaming, chrome, hourglass-shaped construct that Obi-Wan found a bit puzzling. It looked more like an edgy work of art, a Mavinian cluster wedding organ, or perhaps a Juzian colony marker than anything dangerous enough to concern a Jedi. Rows of narrow-pointed legs at the base were the only apparent means of locomotion. The technician fiddled with the device, running various wires from it to a pod at her waist. Perhaps it was some sort of advanced medroid. The audience grew increasingly restless as she detached the wires, then turned and addressed them. "My name is Leto Shan, and I thank you for your patience," she said. "I believe that our first demonstration is ready for your graces." Shan gave a little bow and swept her hand toward the gleaming construct. "I present the JK-13. To demonstrate its prowess, we have selected a Confederacy destroyer droid, captured on Geonosis and reconstructed to original manufacturer specifications." With a hiss of compressing and decompressing hydraulics, the destroyer droid rolled forward, crunching the sand into tread ridges as it did. The JK model hunched down, gleaming, but in a strange way seemed oddly helpless. It seemed almost a quiver as it crouched. The impression of helplessness was reinforced by the size differential. The JK was perhaps half the battle droid's mass. In a single moment, the JK divided into segments, assuming a spider-like configuration. In that instant, its pose seemed less of a cowering leaf-eater than one of those cunning creatures that mime helplessness to lure their prey into range. The destroyer droid spat red fire at its adversary. The sand rippled as the JK projected not a single force field, but a series of rotating energy disks that absorbed the blasts with ease. The attacking droid continued its rain of fire, unable to comprehend that its pure power approach had proved inefficient. Like most machines, it was powerful, but stupid. Obi-Wan's eyes narrowed. Something unusual was happening. The JK sprouted tentacles from the sides and top, tendrils snaking out so swiftly that the destroyer droid had not the slightest chance of evasion. Now Obi-Wan, and indeed most of the witnesses, leaned toward the action as the war droid struggled helplessly in the JK's tentacled grip. Initially, the tendrils were thick and ropey. Even as he watched, they grew thinner, and then thinner still, webbing the attacker with fibers that finally reduced to an almost invisible fineness. The tendrils chewed into the destroyer droid's casing like hundreds of silk-thin fiber saws. The droid finally seemed to comprehend its peril and commenced a desperate struggle, emitting disturbingly lifelike keening sounds. Soon, the droid's struggles ceased. Smoke oozed from its slivered casing. Then, like some piece of overripe metallic fruit, it simply divided into sections. Each crashed to the sand in individual chunks, spitting sparks and leaking greenish fluid. The pieces rattled into the dust, trembled. A second later, stillness and silence reigned. For a moment, the crowd was stunned into silence.
Droid against droid, a globe-headed Bith beside him scoffed. Games for children.
Beneath them, Lido Shan was unruffled. Your indulgence, please. We wished merely to establish a baseline, a reference point against an opponent both familiar and formidable. This Class 4 combat droid was stopped in less than 42 seconds. Behind Obi-Wan, an amphibious Aqualicious translation pod gargled a question.
But what of living opponents?
The technician nodded, as if she had anticipated such a query. Our very next demonstration involves a highly trained clone commando. On cue, a single clone trooper, a commando in full battle armor, armed with an infantry-grade blaster rifle, stepped forward from his hiding place beneath the lip of the arena wall. A blast helmet concealed his features, but his posture bespoke aggressive readiness. An uneasy mutter wound its way through the crowd. The amphibian seemed taken aback.
I would not wish to be responsible for a death.
The technician fixed the Aqualish with a pitying gaze. Don't worry. The machine is calibrated for non-lethal apprehension. Although that pronouncement quieted most of the witnesses, Obi-Wan felt even more uneasy. What exactly is the trooper's objective? Obi-Wan called down. The corners of Lido Shan's lips pulled upward. To fight his way past the JK and capture me. The trooper edged forward warily until he was about 24 meters from the creature. The commando raised his blaster to his shoulder and fired a crimson bolt of light. The spinning absorption discs reappeared, sucking the energy bolts with a liquid crackling sound. But the mere fact that the droid needed a force screen seemed to encourage the trooper. He feinted to the right and then rolled to the left, sprang nimbly off his shoulder to fire again, repeatedly changing position as the droid continued its defensive action. Obi-Wan opened his senses, stretching out with the force. He could almost feel the man's racing heart, taste his nervousness, sense the choices weighed as he wove his evasive web. Left, right, left. The next move would be to the left again. As the great Jedi watched, the JK spat out a webbing of strands as thick as his small finger, ensnaring the clone helplessly in mid-leap. The timing was superb. No, more than superb. It had been perfect. What kind of programming made such precision possible? Obi-Wan could swear that the aim had been almost precognitive. Almost. But that was impossible. Struggling in the net as the JK dragged him closer, the trooper pulled his blaster around to draw a bead on the technician. Obi-Wan's eyes flickered to the technician. She seemed unconcerned. In the moment before the barrel would have fixed on her, an orange spark flowed out along the tentacles. The trooper rocked with a single hard, violent shiver, thrashed his heels against the sand, and then lay still. For a moment, the crowd's every intake of breath seemed frozen in their collective throats. Then the JK's web unraveled, flowing back into the droid. The trooper groaned and rolled over onto his side. Another moment, and he levered himself to his knees, wobbly but unharmed. Another trooper helped him retreat beneath the arena wall's curved lip. The audience applauded, with the exception of Obi-Wan and another Jedi who edged his way through the crowd to stand beside him. Obi-Wan felt relief as he saw that the Jedi was no more inclined toward applause than he. He was 2 centimeters taller than Obi-Wan, yellowish-green in skin tone, with the ropey cranial sensor tentacles and unblinking eyes typical of a Nautilin. This was Kit Fisto, veteran of Geonosis and 100 other lethal hotspots. Was it mere coincidence that the Nautilin was here, or had he too been summoned? Kit looked down at Obi-Wan's hands, noted their tension. "Such displays are not to your liking?" he asked. The surfaces of Fisto's unblinking black eyes swirled. This was repressed anger, but few non-Nautilins would have known that. "I see little regard for the trooper's welfare," Obi-Wan said. Kit gave a humorless chuckle. "The reefs of policy and privilege make war seem merely some distant entertainment." The globe-headed Bith in front of them turned his head 180 degrees without moving his shoulders.
"Come now, sir. It's just a clone, after all."
Just a clone. Flesh and blood, yes, but bred in a bottle. Merely another of the more than 1 million clone troopers born with no father to protect them and no mother to mourn. Yes, merely a clone.
"Excellent, excellent,"
said another witness, a leathery creature sporting a cyclopean cluster of eyes in the center of his head.
"Excellent. I now understand how the JKs earned their reputation among the criminal class."
The globe-headed Bith and the leathery creature exchanged a swift, odd glance, piquing Obi-Wan's curiosity. "Which is?" But the two turned back to the arena, pretending not to hear Obi-Wan's question. The leathery one spoke again.
"You wish us to be concerned," he said to Lido Shan. "We are prepared to acknowledge the potency of such a device, but we are fortunate enough to have Jedi among us today. Would it be impolite to request a demonstration?"
Obi-Wan watched as dozens of eyes turned toward them, evaluating, triggering whispers. Kit Fisto leaned closer without ever looking directly at him.
"What do you make of this?"
Obi-Wan shrugged.
"I've little urge to satisfy their curiosity." "Nor I," Kit said.
He then turned and addressed the technician.
"Tell me, does JK-13 have meaning beyond a standard alphanumeric designation?"
The technician shuffled her feet hesitantly.
"Not officially," she began.
"But unofficially?" Obi-Wan prodded. The tech cleared her throat uncomfortably.
"Among smugglers and the lower classes," she said, "some call them Jedi killers."
"Charming," Obi-Wan said, more to himself than anyone else, momentarily too stunned to answer. Beside him, Kit doffed his cloak, face set in its implacable pale green mask.
His cranial tendrils, Obi-Wan noticed, were restless, even as his unblinking eyes focused on the droid. "What are you doing?" Obi-Wan asked. Almost certainly, this was why Kit had been invited. His volatility and courage were renowned. "I would feel this thing for myself," Kit said, voice deadly calm. He then raised his voice in challenge. "Technician, at your pleasure." The Nautilin's head sensors wavered in the still air. The droid regarded him without reaction. With a single glance back at Obi-Wan, Kit somersaulted to the floor of the arena with a poise and fluidity no chin-bred point guard could have dreamed of, landing without a sound. He now stood a dozen meters away from the JK. As before, the droid seemed harmless. Master Fisto's lightsaber flashed in his hand, and its emerald length rose from the hilt, scorching the air as it blossomed. The droid emitted a hum that climbed in pitch and intensity until Obi-Wan's skin crawled. It extended tentacles again, but this time they wiggled in an oddly sluggish fashion. Strange indeed. Although previously appearing flexible and alert, was it now about to use the same tactics it had used against the commando? Perhaps the droid was not so advanced as he had initially feared. Kit's lightsaber swatted the first tendril from the air with contemptuous ease. Warning sirens howled in Obi-Wan's mind. The tendrils were only a feint. Where, then, was the real attack? He leaned forward, examining the droid more carefully. Its feet. The spiky protrusions were sunken in the sand, and projecting outward toward the treads themselves, burrowing under the surface, were more tendrils, color camouflaged to resemble sand. These sand tendrils were within centimeters of their target before Kit sensed them. His lidless black eyes grew wider still as the sand erupted. A stalk snaked around his foot, trying to yank him onto his back. Other vines raced to assist the first group. The onlookers gasped in amazement as they realized that they were about to see the unthinkable. A mere droid defeating a mighty Jedi. But Kit was far from vanquished. As if he too had merely been playing a game, he crouched and leapt forward, spinning on his body's vertical axis like some kind of carnival acrobat, surging directly at the JK. He rode its yanking motion instead of fighting it, slipping between the tendrils, the Nautilin's sense of timing faster and more precise than conscious thought. Whatever its powers, the droid had not anticipated such an assault, nor could it adjust in time. It released him and retreated up a step, all tendrils lashing at the Jedi. Kit's lightsaber rained sparks. Tentacles flopped onto the sand. Some of the larger pieces twitching, more like separate creatures than severed limbs. The Nautilin hit the sand, rolled, and bore in again instantly. His face tightened into a fighting snarl. Now the JK battled at maniacal intensity. Again and again the tendrils lashed at Kit's head. Had Leto Shan failed to give the droid proper inhibiting commands? If so, and the gleaming monstrosity had a single opportunity, it would slay the Nautilin. But Kit had entered lightsaber range. At this more intimate distance, the droid was at a disadvantage. Now Kit was the predator, the JK reduced to prey. Kit's emerald lightsaber blade was here, there, everywhere, unpredictable, irresistible. The spinning energy disks no longer absorbed the strikes. Now they merely deflected them, sparks raining in all directions. Kit accelerated into a blur of motion, complex and rapid enough to baffle even Obi-Wan's experienced gaze. The Jedi's lightsaber wove between the energy shields, descending on the JK's housing for the first time. The droid emitted a painfully thin shriek. Its gleaming legs shivered. It collapsed to the sand. It twitched, struggling to rise, and then spilled onto its side, spewing smoke and sparks. The arena was silent as the crowd absorbed what they had just witnessed. Doubtless, some had never seen a Jedi in full action. It was one thing to hear whispered stories about mysterious temple dwellers, another thing entirely to see the almost supernatural skills for oneself. But there was another aspect of the affair that most eyes had missed. A strange phenomenon that had manifested first with the trooper, but seemed even more pronounced with Kit Fisto. The J.K. had anticipated the Nautilin's responses. "What is this device?" Obi-Wan asked. "I note that the shields absorb rather than deflect." The technician nodded. "And what does that suggest to you, Master Jedi?" "It is no battlefield implement. It is designed to protect its environment, even from ricochets." "Excellent," she said. "And judging by its cosmetic appearance, the JK is some manner of personal security droid." "That concludes the demonstration," Lido Shan said. "There will be briefings for some of you. As for the others, the Supreme Chancellor appreciates your presence."
The Supreme Chancellor's briefing room was as tall as 4 Wookiees, its marble ceiling supported by massive Duracrete pillars. Its vast bay window peered out on Coruscant's magnificent skyline. The Bonadan Embassy and revolving Sky Sitter restaurant were directly across the avenue. At the moment, a cluster of scaled and emerald-eyed Kuwadi dignitaries busily exchanged formal pleasantries and goodbyes with the Chancellor and his robed assistants. The two Jedi stood in a corner of the room as the ambassadors executed elaborate ceremonial bows. When the diplomats had exited the room, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine finally addressed them. "My pardon for the inconvenience and mystery, my friends," he said. "I hope that you will shortly understand the need for both." The Chancellor sat at his great desk, rectangles of light and shadow dividing his face into quadrants. He turned to the short-haired female technician, who had silently entered the room while the Chancellor spoke. "Lido Shan?"
"With pleasure, sir," she said.
"When this device first came to our attention, our first priority was to determine exactly how it performs in such an unusual manner. Ordinary scans showed little of note in the inner workings, save for a completely shielded central processor unit."
"Naturally, that processor was the focus of your investigations," Obi-Wan said.
"Naturally," Lido Shan replied. "Opening the processor invalidates the warranty, but we thought it worth the risk."
Kit canted his head.
"And what did you find?"
"Please," Lido Shan said, imitating the Chancellor's tendency for oblique discourse.
"In time.
Let us begin with an assessment based on its displayed skills. The JK is a force-sensitive biodroid of a type previously considered impossible. For much of the last year, they've been sold throughout the galaxy. Even at inflated prices, they sell faster than they can be manufactured."
"Force-sensitive?" Kit scoffed. "Absurd. Why haven't we seen these droids before?"
"Because," she replied, "they are the most exclusive, expensive personal security droids available."
"And exactly what is this cost?"
Kit asked.
80,000 credits. Shan gestured, and a hologram maze of droid circuitry blossomed in the air around her.
"And now," she said finally, "we come to the heart of the matter. The secret of their success is a unique living circuit design incorporating organics into the core processor, allowing greater empathy with the owners and superior tactical aggression toward intruders."
"Living circuits?" Kit asked.
"The processor is actually a life support unit for a creature of unknown origin."
The hologram flickered, darkened. A coiled, snake-like, eyeless image appeared. A comparison scale suggested that the creature was the size of Obi-Wan's clenched fist.
"And this gives the droid its special qualities?" he asked.
"Yes," Lido Shan said. "We believe so. We made a direct request for information from the manufacturers, but they refused to discuss their secrets."
"And this manufacturer is?"
"Cestus Cybernetics. Are you familiar with Ord Cestus?"
Obi-Wan scanned his memory.
"The homeworld of Bactoid armor," Lido Shan nodded. Our Sestian contacts tell us that the animal is called a Dashta eel. This Dashta appears to be non-sentient, which in some ways is even more amazing, representing the first non-sentient creature ever found with a profound level of, well, of force sensitivity. Dashta eels. Obi-Wan glanced at Kit, who shook his head.
When did these Jedi killers first appear on the market?
Kit asked. About a year ago, Palpatine replied. Soon after the Clone Wars began. Extensive Trade Federation contracts created a boom on Cestus, which subcontracted for the Bactoid Armor Workshop. After the Battle of Naboo, the Trade Federation distanced itself from the workshop, creating economic chaos. Financially desperate, Cestus turned to the Republic and requested our help. We made a substantial order. He winced. But, unfortunately, we were spread too thin economically, and payment was not prompt. More chaos resulted. We may have misjudged the importance of this small planet. Lido Shan, he said. Speak of the Gabanas. Lido Shan sighed. As soon as the war began, we placed certain highly important technical parts on restriction. Among these were Gabana memory crystals, used by Ord Cestus in the manufacture of high-end Cestus security droids, its most famous non-military product prior to the introduction of the JK line. And how did that lead to the current situation? Obi-Wan asked. With the restrictions, Shan said, Cestus's rather delicate economic balance shifted to the negative. Gabanas are the only memory crystals fast enough to power a Class 5 personal security droid. Most battle droids are Class 4 and can run on less extreme hardware. The Chancellor shook his graying head. Cestus was unlucky, and perhaps foolish to place so many of its cocoons in one hutch. Kit Fisto then spoke for both Jedi.
So, the situation is quite unstable. Cestus no longer trusts us.
The Chancellor nodded. You are doubly tasked, my Jedi friends. I have consulted with the Senate and the Jedi Council, and we agree that you are to contact the Sestian Regent, one Gamai Duris. Regain her trust by taking any necessary steps to preserve their existing social order. We must bring them back into the fold and stem the flow of these obscene Jedi killers.
And our resources, sir?
Kit asked.
The best of the best.
Advanced Recon Commando A98, the ARC trooper known as Nate to his cohorts, lay back against the transport's waffled floor as it flew him and 50 of his brothers back to the barracks from Vandor 3, the second inhabitable planet in Coruscant's star system. This had been the severest training exercise he'd yet endured. According to rumor, the mortality rate had edged close to the maximum 2%. He didn't resent that statistic, however. Nate understood full well the ancient axiom. The more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in combat. Nate and the other clone troopers were wounded and weary. Some still trembled with the after effects of adrenaline dump. A few chewed nerve sticks. One or two sat cross-legged and eyes closed. Some slept, and a few chatted in low tones, mulling over the day's events. To outsiders, they were all the same, but clones saw all of the differences. The scars, the tanning, the difference in body language due to various trainings, vocal intonation variations due to different service stations, changes in scent due to diet. It didn't matter that they'd all begun life in identical artificial wombs. In millions of tiny ways, their conditioning and experiences were different, and that created differences in both performance and personality. Nate peered out of one of the side viewports, down on one of the towns at the outskirts of Vandor 3's capital city. This was a small industrial burg, a petroleum cracking plant of some kind, surrounded by square kilometers of barren, unused land. This was where the barracks had been built. A temporary city built purely for housing and training 50,000 troopers. The transport dropped them off in front of a huge gray prefab building, housing perhaps three of the troop city's 50,000. Floating on a haze of fatigue, Nate caught a turbo lift up to the third level, counting down the ranks of bunks until reaching his own. Nate dropped his gear onto the floor beside his bed, stripped off his clothes, and trudged to the shower. A98 entered the refresher station, moving along to the steaming tile-floored confines of the shower room. He leaned against the gushing water, gasping as it struck his new abrasions. In the Jedi Temple's archives, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Kit Fisto studied their assignment, the industrial powerhouse known as Ord Cestus. Obi-Wan found Cestus an interesting study. A relatively barren rock, rich in certain ores, but miserable for most agricultural farming. Much of its surface was desert. The native life forms included a hive-based insectile people known as the Jiting, and a variety of large, deadly, and reputedly non-sentient cave spiders. The current population stood in the millions, with several advanced cities, unsustainable without imported resources. Fertilizers and soil nutrients, medications, and spices used to modify the water supply for non-natives.
Dangerous, Kit said. A simple rationing drove them into Count Dooku's arms. That could never have happened to a self-sufficient people.
This was simple truth. In war, secure supply lines were as crucial as trained soldiers. 300 standard years before, the relatively primitive Jiting, a single colony with multiple hives spread around the planet, had contracted with Coruscant, offering land for a galactic prison facility. At some point, Cestus Penitentiary began a program designed to train and utilize prisoner skills. This became interesting when a series of financial scandals and an industrial tragedy on Eddie 4 sent a dozen minor officers of Cybot Galactica, the Republic's second-largest manufacturer, to prison for 20 standard years. The 12 officers hadn't been on Cestus for 2 years before cutting a deal with prison officials to begin research and fabrication of a line of droid products. Access to vast amounts of raw material and virtually free labor released a flood of wealth. The 12 were quickly and quietly work-furloughed into opulent homes. Select guards and officials became wealthier still, and a corrupt dynastic conglomerate was born. Cestus Cybernetics, producing an excellent line of personal security droids. The next events were difficult to sort out. Large tracts of land were purchased from the Hive at fire sale prices. Then, following terrible plagues among the Jiting, Cestus Cybernetics gained almost complete control of the planet. Still, life, even for the average off-worlder, had been rough before Cestus Cybernetics subcontracted to the fabulously wealthy and successful Bactoid Armor Workshops. It retooled completely, tapping into an interstellar market in high-end military hardware. The economy expanded and then crashed when the Trade Federation cut ties after the Naboo fiasco. Boom, then crash. Cycles of growth and decay followed one another with numbing regularity. Obi-Wan scanned the roster of current leaders. Following the last century's plagues, after the near destruction of the entire Hive, the office of Planetary Regent was still held by one of royal Jiting lineage. One, Gemai Duris. Was this office elective? Hereditary? Was Duris a figurehead or a genuine power? Another reference an hour later caught Obi-Wan's eye. Mention of a group of guerrilla fighters called Desert Wind. Most of the surface farmers were poor, descended from the rank-and-file prisoners after their parole. Protesting a century of oppression, Desert Wind had sprung up 20 years back and tried to force Cestus's industrial rulers, a cabal of wealthy industrialists called the Five Families, to the bargaining table. Desert Wind had been crushed in the past year, but there were said to be a few left, still mounting raids on company caravans. The more deeply the two Jedi peered, the more the truth of power on Cestus and its delicate relationship with Coruscant evaded them. Finally, after 8 hours of study, the Nautilin snarled.
It's like digging through a sponge reef. We'd need a wizard to sort through this nonsense.
I don't know many wizards, Obi-Wan replied, but I think a good barrister would be invaluable. And I know just the one.
Excellent, Kit said. And another concern. If negotiations go poorly, we may wish to pressure this Duris person.
Obi-Wan flinched. Kit was correct, but Obi-Wan preferred caution. Have you a suggestion?
Yes. You and the barrister deal with the politicians. We have...
He searched his screen for the information.
Two contacts on Cestus. A human female named Sheikha Tull and a Jatine named Trillet. Between them, we should find the necessary leverage.
If they are trustworthy, Obi-Wan offered.
Kit laughed. Are you suggesting we can't trust our own people?
That question hung in the air, tension increasing every moment. Then, Obi-Wan laughed.
Of course not.
Good, the Nautilin said.
As I was saying, I'll take an ARC and a few commandos and recruit native troops for emergency use.
Obi-Wan grasped the logic instantly. If they brought Desert Wind back to life, the Regent and these five families would be more nervous, less secure, possibly more receptive to Republic overtures. It wouldn't do to have a trooper's body captured. Its genetic signature would be evidence of Coruscant's manipulations. Ten hours later, A-98 reawakened, his recovery cycle complete. He glanced at his sleep capsule's heads-up screen, which reminded him to report to the op center for orders. 30 seconds was spent in a quick mental survey of his body. Another half minute was invested in his morning mental ritual, completing the shift from deep sleep to full waking. 10 minutes later, Nate was ushered into a small office tucked away beneath an ammo dump and a people mover, ferrying workers back and forth to the city. His commanding officer, a Mon Calamari major named Aptid Squelch, sat hunched over papers when Nate entered.
A-98?
Yes, ma'am.
Take a seat, please.
Nate did so, easing into a hard-backed chair of densely veined Corellian hardwood. He ran a thick thumbnail along the arm's grooved channels as the major finished reading the screen and then folded her hands to speak to him.
I have a new assignment for you, Major Squelch said, blinking her huge dark eyes. I assume you are prepared.
100%, ma'am.
The ritual response.
Very good. You will accompany and assist two Jedi to a planet called Ord Cestus. Do you know it?
No, ma'am, but I'll get up to speed immediately. My support.
4 commandos, she said. That is all.
Nate left and took the belt walk to the Hollow Library to put in a few hours researching the target planet. Nate was so immersed in his research that he barely noticed when another trooper began reading over his shoulder.
Hmm, said the other trooper.
I'm Fori. I was near that sector last month.
That perked up his interest.
I'm Nate.
Do you know a planet called Ord Cestus?
Heard of it, Nate.
Fori peeled a nerve stick and bit off a shallow chaw.
Makes droids. Didn't they manufacture those MTTs?
Multi-troop transports, nearly unstoppable. Their armor and twin blaster cannons had cut quite a swath on Naboo.
Maybe so. Anything else? Only know that much because of that demo yesterday. They made the JK model that 732 went against.
I hadn't heard. What happened?
Fori shrugged.
He was captured. JKs are some kind of special security model. It only took about 20 seconds, and he's still in the infirmary.
Do we have vid footage? Nate asked.
Sure, Fori said. I'll call it for you.
He began to brush crystals on the desk in front of them, and hollow images blossomed into misty life. The footage had been recorded in the Chichuk Arena no more than 40 hours earlier. Nate watched as the trooper made standard evasive moves and even a few admirably tricky broken rhythm maneuvers. Ultimately, none of them worked. Their brother went down, hard, in just a few miserable seconds.
Disturbing.
They watched a replay.
Fast, Nate said. As a Jedi? Faster, Forey said. But speed isn't everything. Look at this.
The footage of a Jedi with protruding head tentacles appeared.
From Glee Anselm, Nate said. Don't see many Nautilans around. Jedi, huh? Who else would use one of those archaic light sticks?
Forey said. They shared a good laugh at that. The Jedi were awesome fighters, but their adherence to illogical quasi-spiritual beliefs was beyond Nate's comprehension. He examined the Nautilan Jedi's image again.
So a Jedi actually came down from the temple and rolled the dice.
And?
Watch for yourself, Forey said.
Nate triggered play, and together they watched as the Jedi not only stood his ground against the JK, but actually forced it into retreat. Nate inhaled sharply as the Jedi beat the thing at its own game. In some ways, his tactics weren't that different from those attempted by the trooper, but the results were impressively superior.
Beat it, Nate said.
Mm-hmm.
Forey clucked admiringly.
Did you see that timing?
Uh-huh, Nate said.
Never seen reflexes like that either.
You're right. The machine was faster, but it didn't make any difference.
They beat Jango.
Both of them said simultaneously. These three words were almost a litany. Whatever they could say about Jedi being strange or egotistical or bizarrely esoteric, in an arena on Geonosis, they had slain the clone trooper's template, and that meant they were worthy of respect.
Good hunting, Forey said to Nate.
Good hunting, Nate replied.
Then he paused.
You been given your next op yet?
Nope, Forey said.
Dealing me in?
If you want it, Nate said. 100%.
Let me check in and out, get my sack and tack.
You'll have orders within the hour.
A crushing handshake, and Forey went his way. For a few hours, Obi-Wan lay in his cubicle's hard bed, slowing and synchronizing his body's rhythms to maximize the restorative benefits. He emerged rested and ready, packing his gear and rendezvousing with Kit for the flight to Cestus. In the temple's communal dining hall, the two Jedi shared a meal of Thransel pate and hawkbat eggs. They took an air taxi out to Centralia Memorial Spaceport. There awaited a refurbished Republic cruiser, its scarlet skin panels open at the aft wing as technicians made last-minute adjustments to the fuel atomizer cone and radiation dampers. They'd half finished supervising their ship's loading when a military shuttle arrived, its tri-wing configuration folded for docking. Five troopers in gleaming white armor exited. If Obi-Wan was entirely honest with himself, he had to admit that large groups of clone troopers made him slightly uncomfortable. Easy to understand and explain away. One factor was that under their helmets, they were the absolute image of the notorious bounty hunter, Jango Fett, who had come within a hair of killing him on three separate occasions. More disturbing still was the fact that, although genetically human, they had not led human lives. Clone troopers were born and bred purely for war, without the nurturance of a mother's embrace or the safety of a father's loving discipline.
General Kenobi,
the trooper saluted.
CT-36/732 reporting. May we take your gear, sir?
Yes, please stow it in our cabin. With admirable ease, the trooper slung his gear over his left shoulder, a nod his only response.
Oh my! Oh my!
A falsetto voice cried behind them. Obi-Wan turned, recognition filtering its way through his other thoughts. Approaching slowly was a creature with a great flat turquoise shell, covering a wet, fleshy body. The creature crept along on a single, many-toed foot. A yellowish mucus trail glistened on the ground behind him. Obi-Wan smiled. "Barrister Snoil," he said with genuine pleasure. Politicians Obi-Wan distrusted, and in most cases their minions were even worse. Regardless, Dool Snoil was one of the three or four finest legal minds of his acquaintance, and had proven worthy of trust during sensitive negotiations on Rigel 12. Of vipid extraction from the planet Nalhata, Snoil had attended one of Merlst's renowned legal universities before beginning his initial apprenticeship in the Gavarno Cluster. A celebrated career and a reputation for exhaustive research and absolute reliability had led Snoil to his current berth. If anyone could make sense out of this Cestus mess, it would be Snoil.
"Master Kenobi,"
he said, twin eye stalks wobbling in delight.
"It's been almost 12 years.
Obi-Wan noted the new rings and deposits on the turquoise shell, clear evidence that Dulb had been able to afford regular treatments and shipments of his native Vipchul plants, high in the nutrients his people used to prepare themselves for the rigors of householding. In another few years, he reckoned, Snoil would return home to mate. "I see by your shell that you have been prosperous."
"One tries."
His eye stalk swiveled around.
"And Master Fisto! Oh, my goodness! I did not know that you were accompanying us."
Kit clasped Snoil's hand.
"Good to have you along, Barrister."
Snoil crawled the rest of the way up the landing ramp. The Vipit was followed by 5 troopers moving equipment and armament aboard. They acknowledged the 2 Jedi and continued their work. A trooper displaying captain's colors saluted sharply.
"General Kenobi."
"Yes?"
"Captain A98 at your service. My orders."
He handed Obi-Wan a thumbnail-sized data chip. Obi-Wan inserted the chip into his data pad, and it swiftly generated a hologram. He studied the mission resume and skill sets and was satisfied. "Everything is in order," he nodded. "This is my colleague, Master Kit Fisto." The trooper regarded Kit with an emotion Obi-Wan recognized instantly. Respect.
"General Fisto, an honor to serve with you."
Fascinating. To Obi-Wan, the trooper had merely been polite. His body language toward Kit suggested a greater level of esteem. Obi-Wan swiftly guessed why. The clone had seen vid of Kit's droid encounter. If there was one thing a soldier respected, it was another fighter's prowess.
"Captain," Kit said.
The trooper turned to his 4 men.
"Get the equipment aboard,"
he said, and they hastened to obey. Within minutes, all the gear was stowed, the checklists completed, the protocols passed. The ship hummed and then hovered. Then, with an explosive acceleration, broke free of Coruscant's gravity and lanced up into the clouds. For 2 hours, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Kit Fisto had practiced with their lightsabers, increasing their pace slowly and steadily as the minutes passed. The cargo bay sizzled with an energized metallic tang as their sabers singed moisture from the air. Obi-Wan swiftly discovered that Kit was the better sword fighter. Astonishingly aggressive and intuitive in comparison with Obi-Wan's more measured style. A master from the Sabilan region of Glian Selm, Kit was a practitioner of Form 1 lightsaber combat. It was the most ancient style of fighting, based on ancient sword techniques. At a crucial instant, Kit hissed, more to himself than Obi-Wan, then stepped back, disengaged, and switched his lightsaber off. Obi-Wan switched his off as well.
"What is it, my friend?" he asked. "The bio-droid," Kit said, anger heating his voice. "I should have performed better."
"You were brilliant. What more could you have done?"
"I should have gone closer to the edge," Kit said. "Released myself into the Force. become more unpredictable, more random.
That would have been dangerous, Obi-Wan said. Not to your body, perhaps, but to your spirit. Kit looked up at him.
It is the way of Form One.
Agreed, Obi-Wan replied. But Form One represents greater risk to you as well, my friend. But come, if our ruse is to succeed, we must practice a while.